Welcome to this episode of The Good Fork with host Diana Edelman of Vegans Baby. We're bringing you interesting conversations, interesting people with a plant-based twist. On today's episode of the Good Fork podcast, Jessica Shea joins us. She is the founder and CEO of Vegan Street Fair and Vegan Exchange, two wildly popular vegan events based out of North Hollywood, California. Throughout Vegan Street Fair's history, Jessica has strived to make veganism accessible to as many people as possible while encouraging veteran and new vendors to push the envelope of vegan cuisine and the vegan lifestyle. It's her goal to continue to push veganism to the mainstream while advocating on behalf of those who need it most. On today's episode, Jessica and I talk about how she created Vegan Street Fair and its massive success over the years, plus her work to make vegan life more approachable and the depth of veganism from animals to humans. Hello, today on the Good Fork, I have Jessica Garcia Shea, the founder of Vegan Street Fair and Vegan Exchange. Hello, my dear, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here in the middle of a pandemic. I know things have been a little odd. Is that a good word?
I mean, where else would I be though? So
hanging out at your house.
Connect. Right. It's a great time to connect with people. That's for sure.
It's perfect. So I love you. I know when I first launched Vegans Baby, you were like one of the first people I met at Veggie Nation one day during, I think it was our first Veg Fest. And yeah. I didn't know much about you at that point, but over the past, okay, it's almost 5 years now, I have just been watching you and seeing all the work you do, and I'm just so blown away by it. You have taken this idea and you have made it into this phenomenal, phenomenal event. So let's talk a little bit about Vegan Street Fair and what it is, because it's coming back.
Yes.
Let's talk about it like it's the present.
Yes.
So tell me, tell everyone a little bit about this monstrous sized creation you have birthed to the world.
Yes. It's so funny always talking about Vegan Street Fair in this pandemic, because you talk about it in the past tense, like it's, you know, it's dead or something. It is not dead. No. So Vegan Street Fair basically started in, we started it in 2015, was the very first event. And the idea was that we wanted to create a vegan event that removed all barriers to veganism. Because at the time, in LA, there were no free vegan events at all. Everything was a paid ticket, like a $12 ticket or $60 ticket. And I really felt strongly that in order for us to be the best allies to animals in the event space, we had to, number one, start to remove as many barriers as we could towards exploring veganism. So that's why we created this free to enter, low cost to attendees as well. Because at the time when we first started, all the vendors had to have only $3 options. I don't know if you knew that.
No. Wow.
Yeah, it was like you could only do $3 options. And some vendors were like, hell yeah, like that's great. And other vendors were like, there's no way we can do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, we had 44 vendors in that first year. We put it near a train station and tons of buses. We put it in a very populated city because we had this idea that people would walk there and that people would kind of trip upon it. And that's really what we wanted for Vegan Street Fair. We wanted it to be similar to street fairs that I grew up with in New York, that, you know, you don't necessarily have to be a part of the culture, but when you go there, you feel like you're a part of the culture. So a very non-judgmental, easy to access vegan extravaganza that has no judgment and as much fun as you could possibly have without hurting animals. That's really the gist of Vegan Street Fair.
So the first year, how did it go?
Great question. So the first year was our first year ever hosting anything of this scale, obviously. We didn't know what to expect. We had talked to several vegan event organizers in the industry. We'd done a ton of research. We anticipated about 3,000 to 5,000 people to show up based on what was already occurring in the world. And we ended up with 10,000 people on the streets.
Oh my gosh.
So it was a shock to everyone, but clearly we knew we had a hit right away. Yeah. But you know, it was so much of a hit that there were way too many people on the street. On top of that, at the time we were doing food tickets, so you couldn't buy food with money or credit cards. It was food tickets, and the reason we did that was because we were kind of trying to, we were inspired by Taste of Chicago, mm-hmm. which has been doing that system for over 30 years. Yeah. So we were like, well, if Taste of Chicago is doing it, then it must be a great system. Let's try it ourselves. So so there were lots of factors during that first Vegan Street Fair that made it very challenging. Mm-hmm. On top of that, I have lived in Los Angeles for 12 years, and I've only ever seen hail in LA like 3 or 4 times. It definitely rained and hailed on 10,000 people on March 1st, 2015. My very first event ever. And it was like, I feel like the world was trying to tell me something. I don't know what, like, no, vegans, you can't do this. And I was like, screw you, we're doing this. And I feel like I can do anything now.
You know, it's so funny because Vegas's first Veg Fest was a hailstorm too. Massive. I was driving there and it was, I'm not going to say golf ball size, but it was huge hail. And I'm driving like, oh my God. And it's September and our weather's not too wacky. Like it's pretty consistent. It's sunny like 300 plus days of the year. September's not the time you get hail. And there it was. So, I mean, maybe it's one of those things. It's like, we're just going to test you a little bit. We're going to throw out some hail, see how you do, you know, get your feet wet a little bit, see how much the vegans are coming out, if hail's going to stop them or not. And it didn't stop them. And no. Okay, before we go on to the growth of this, do you have event planning experience?
No.
Okay. So that to me is just ridiculous to, and I've like dipped my toes in a little bit to it. Like I've talked to a couple people here and started the process of putting events on, and I have no experience, and the idea of doing it on my own makes me want to curl up in a ball and just not. How do you do that? How did this all come together?
I think for me, like, there were certain traits that I had always possessed as a kid that maybe leaned themselves to event planning, and I just didn't know. So for example, I was always the friend that organized school projects. So mm-hmm. I would be the one typing up the emails and printing them up and sending them to the teachers and organizing like production shoots, you know, whatever. When I was in high school, I was a part of a TV production class. And then I was also the one who would organize the pizza parties and the bar crawls when I got older and all the gatherings of my friends. That was always me. Mm-hmm. And I think that I just really loved the idea of gathering people together for a common purpose. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's kind of what made this so natural for me, this transition towards event planning, because I think that the best part of Vegan Street Fair for me is setting up the dominoes, as I like to say, and then watching everyone enjoy it.
Yeah.
I don't get to enjoy it myself necessarily, but watching people enjoy, you know what I'm talking about. But I taught myself every single thing. I taught myself how to put together a website. I taught myself how to write a press release. I taught myself how to put together, you know, packages for vendors. I taught myself how to work a PDF. I'd never done that. I taught myself spreadsheets. I taught myself how to go into the city and figure out who I needed to talk to make sure all the pieces were in place so that I could close the street legally and get the fire department and police department's approval. And you have to kind of just be open to the idea that you don't know everything and that's okay. And you're going to keep learning as you go. But I think that the best piece of any event planning puzzle is to do every little part of it yourself first, so that when you eventually grow, you can hire someone to take over a position, but you know all about it and you're not in the dark. Yeah. Because if you hire someone to take over your social media and they're not doing what you were doing or better, then you at least have the knowledge of what is supposed to be being done. And you're not just kind of twiddling your thumbs going like, I hope this is working. So I think that that's, I totally get what you're saying. It can be very intimidating when you first get started, but it's all a journey.
So the first event was March 2015. How far, when did you decide you were going to do it?
It was about 6 or 7 months.
So you did this whole event that was targeted for 3,000 to 5,000 people that doubled those numbers all by yourself in that short amount of time span.
Yeah.
You're a new Wonder Woman. That's incredible. Incredible to be able to accomplish that.
Thank you. I will say my husband helped a ton. You know, he was definitely very instrumental in making sure that we talked to the health department and the fire department. And he walked in to probably 100 vegan and vegan friendly restaurants that first year, like by foot, and talked to everyone. My mother-in-law also would call people. Because, you know, when you first start an event of this size or this magnitude, people don't know you. People don't trust you. They're like, what the hell is this? And you have to kind of have that personal touch that lets people know, like, hey, you're taking a risk, but, like, we really believe in this thing. And so I would probably say it's 80% me and 20% my husband and kind of assistants at that time. But it's, you know, I don't know. You kind of just do it. It's kind of like having a kid. Like, I have 2 children and you don't know what the hell you're doing until you're there.
Yeah.
And you just wing it and you make mistakes, but I never see mistakes as mistakes. I always see them as lessons because you grow from that and you just get better and better as you go.
So fast forward to 2020 and I know, or let's go 2019. So from 2015 to 2019, how much did you grow?
So the first year we moved from the street we were on, because obviously 10,000 people don't fit on 2 streets.
Yeah.
We moved to about a 0.5 mile worth of streets.
Yep.
And much wider. It was like a wider sort of walk through space. Yep. We went from 44 vendors to 100 vendors.
Wow.
And we went from 10,000 people to 20,000 people. And then that was 2016, 27. And then we did food tickets again.
Yeah.
Because we were like, we screwed it up last time. We're going to try it again. And at that time, I think we allowed people to do $15 items as well, like up to $15 items as well. Because we didn't want the vendors to walk away not making money, even though they did that first year. Then the second year, or the third year rather, we got rid of food tickets altogether. We expanded to 1 mile worth of streets.
Wow.
And that was incredible. That was one of our like most incredible years. I mean, they just keep getting incredibly more amazing. 2018, we expanded to Lancashire. We added Lancashire, I believe. So it was a little over a mile.
Is this in downtown LA?
This is in North Hollywood.
North California. Hollywood, okay.
Yeah, and we're really lucky to work with the city council there. They're great. And then in 2019, I think I'm at now.
Yep.
We expanded to a 2-day event. We always kind of have this idea that if we're going to expand in any way, it has to be incremental.
Yeah.
You can't jump from a small venue to a large venue and 2 days. You have to go small venue, a little bit bigger. You know, scaling is very important because then you can gauge your audience and you're growing your popularity as you go as well. Yeah. So we took 5 years to eventually get from 44 vendors, 10,000 people, 2 streets, to now a 2-day festival, 60,000 people, 200 vendors. And it has been an incredible, incredible 6 years.
Okay, first off, I'm really bad in crowds. And that's one of the reasons I haven't made it out there yet, because I see everybody on Instagram every year. And I'm just like, there's no way. Like, I will be the girl like in the corner being like, can you go get me some food? Because that's massive. Oh, congratulations, by the way. It's such an accomplishment. So, okay, let's get to the crappy stuff. So we're in 2020. And your event was to take place in March. So let's talk a little bit about, you obviously the pandemic forced you to postpone or skip 2020. Is that what you decided to do? Yeah, okay.
At this rate, we are having to skip 2020. Yeah. Okay.
So what kind of pivots have you done during the pandemic?
So first of all, it was a huge, huge, huge blow, because even though the very first Vegan Street Fair, we only planned that in 6 to 7 months, the subsequent Vegan Street Fairs take a full year with every single piece that goes into place, right? You have a PR team, you have staff, you have graphics, you have street designs with street services, and they have to tell you where barricades go and K-rails, and you know, you have meetings with the city and the federal because they're doing the bar, and this takes a full year.
Yeah.
So losing Vegan Street Fair was a major blow, not just to me and my team, but also to every single vendor that invested, that worked super hard all year to like hone their craft and make their food amazing, buy equipment, you know, getting ready. And it's really sad because there's nothing we could have done. Obviously, the entire world is dealing with this same issue.
Yeah.
And we are the last industry to come back from everything I understand.
Yeah.
So what we've really had to do in the pandemic is figure out how to keep connecting people to each other, because that's what Vegan Street Fair is. You go to Vegan Street Fair and you connect with vendors, with food, with the vibe, with LA, because we have many, many, many people that travel from around the world here.
Yeah.
Which is lovely. So what we really wanted to do is just kind of bridge that gap in the meantime. So we started doing something called Vegan Street Fair at Home, which is an online platform for online content. So we do cooking shows and business Q&As. We do veganism 101 chats and all kinds of things just to make sure that nobody's missing out on that connection. And what I've learned, which is very cool, and like everybody's kind of figuring this out as they go, of course, what I've learned about the things that you pivot towards in a pandemic is that these are things you can continue to do after the pandemic, because a lot of the people that are following and like joining our classes are in Florida, they're in New York, they're in Delaware, and they don't necessarily get access to street fair because maybe they can't afford a ticket or they can't afford to take off of work, so they can never make it to street fair. So this is kind of a way to get Vegan Street Fair into their kitchen. So when they're making something from a vendor, I do feel like it gives them a little piece of Vegan Street Fair in this very weird, bizarre time.
Yeah.
We are working on a couple other projects in the meantime, which hopefully will come to fruition shortly. But for right now, Vegan Street Fair at Home on Patreon has been our saving grace.
And how can people find that?
So that's patreon.com/veganstreetfair. And it's a monthly subscription. So at $5, you get like 8 classes, which is unheard of in the Patreon world. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And at the $10 level, you get 12 classes, and the $25 level, you get a swag bag. So we really just the same thing as Vegan Street Fair. You have to obviously pay something, but it's low cost for great, great content, quality content. You're not just throwing $5 away. You're like getting something out of it. You know, we talk all the time with our patrons, and it's such a beautiful thing when they're like, man, I bought grapeseed oil this week because I learned that, you know, I learned from Jocelyn of Todo Verde that you don't cook with olive oil. You use it as a finishing oil. I didn't know that. I've been cooking with right. You see, this is what I'm talking about.
No idea.
So we're all kind of learning and gaining all these really great tips.
Yeah.
And not simply consuming a beautiful event, which it is, but also leaving with tools that I think are necessary. And making it low cost, you know, gives people a little bit more of an opportunity to do that.
Yeah. All right. Tell me about Vegan Exchange.
So Vegan Exchange is basically Vegan Street Fair's baby. And it actually takes place on the very same street that Vegan Street Fair Year One happened, which is very full circle and strange. But it's a weekly market that happens on Sundays right in North Hollywood, around the corner from Vegan Street Fair. And there's 40 vendors a week. It is beautiful. It is so much fun. It is like a reunion every week. We get regulars. We get people that plan their entire trips around Vegan Exchange. Like, they come to Los Angeles from wherever, and they spend the entire day there, and they're like, I came just for this, and now I'm going to explore LA.
Wow.
Like, it's the coolest thing. It's basically just Vegan Street Fair on a super small scale.
You've really in terms of promoting veganism and access, you've really put LA on the map for this, because your Vegan Street Fair is the world's largest gathering of vegan vendors. And I don't know many vegan markets. I know a lot, I mean, Vegas doesn't have anything like that. And it's just incredible to see that there's a demand for it. And I think it's so important for people to see that there's a demand for it, because I talk to people all the time and they're like, oh, it's really hard to go vegan. I can't do it. There's this, there's that. But you literally say, here you go, go to this market once a week, and here are these options for you. I'm going to help you make it easier.
Yes, that's exactly how it works. And people will bring, you know, because it's a weekly thing and there's regulars, people walk from their apartment buildings. People plan, you know, to take the train. They will bring people to this event as a trophy almost of like, this is what veganism could be. Please come and enjoy this with me.
Yeah.
And that is what I think all events should be. I tell people all the time, I don't make events for vegans.
Yeah, exactly. That,
I don't care if that's controversial to you. If you don't like it, this is not for you. You're vegan. I'm vegan. Do I need to make you more vegan? Do I need to make me more vegan? Absolutely not. We're there. But if you can convince a non-vegan that veganism is delicious, that veganism is not just angry, graphic, violent, mad, vegan throwing paint on people, and that it comes in different colors and shapes and religions and genders, then people that are not vegan can see themselves in this movement and they can go, oh, this is what veganism is, because for so long I thought it was this. And so we're just trying to break that stereotype and trying to get people to see that vegans are just like everyone else. And in fact, you know, you don't necessarily need to go vegan to enjoy something like this, but I do want to plant as many seeds as I can. So when you do decide to go vegan, you don't know that I did that to you.
That's exactly my point with Vegans Amy too. Like, I want people that aren't vegan to see that you can eat vegan food, that it's approachable, that people, vegan people are approachable, and it's not all exactly what you said, the people that are going to throw paint on you or make you watch videos. Because I think a lot of time I worked in animal rights in Thailand, and I saw horrible stuff, and I would tell people about it and they're like, oh, whatever. It doesn't impact me. But you know, it does the stuff you're putting on your plate. So
that's the thing. That's 100% it. And I tell people this all the time. Sure. I mean, people can argue anything. They can argue that, you know, whatever. They'll argue that the sky is green.
Yeah.
But it's a lot harder to argue, I think, if something tastes good.
Yep.
Like, if I give you something delicious and this is a burger and you eat it and you go, wow, this is good. It's harder to argue that than, oh, sorry, it's easier to like not argue that. Yeah. Sorry. Let me rephrase that. It's harder to argue that this isn't good.
Yeah.
There you go. And then it is to argue ethics, because people can find every reason why those animals in Thailand, you know, they're fine, or it's no big deal,
yeah,
or
they live happy lives.
They live happy lives. That's what they're there for. We are, yeah, superior. They're going to argue that till the cows come home. And frankly, I don't want that. That's why with my events, you'll never see, it is written into people's contracts.
Yep.
You are not allowed to bring graphic imagery to my events. I do not care.
Yep.
I do not care. Especially because as a vegan, I don't want to see that. I see it all the time.
Exactly.
No, thank you. Do you really think that beating someone over the head with graphic imagery is going to make them change their minds? No. You know what is going to get them to change their minds? Inherent change that they decided on their own with the help of little seeds being planted. Mm-hmm. That is what I believe. I think people go vegan when they decide, not when you tell them to.
Yep. 100. Oh, I love you. 100%.
Right.
And that leads me to the next thing, because we're running out of time, but this is very, I think, extremely important. What to you is being vegan?
To me, being vegan is about compassion for all living beings. I know the technical definition is about animals, right? Like, do as little harm as humanly possible. It's not a diet. It's all about lifestyle and ethics.
Mm-hmm.
Humans are animals too. And I believe for me, my veganism does not just extend to non-human animals, because that is what the what most vegans would tell you.
Yeah.
I don't believe that. To me, veganism is about understanding that the world has animalized every part of our world. So I treat every single oppression that exists as equal, because it is equal.
Yeah.
If I believe that animals have the right to live a peaceful, loving life, I also believe that humans deserve the same right. So my veganism extends to not just non-human animals, but to human animals as well. And that's why I believe, you know, I practice what's called consistent anti-oppression, which is like the idea that, you know, if a person or an animal is oppressed, then I'm against it and I'm going to fight it.
Yeah.
And that's the bottom line.
So how can somebody do that? Like, what are some actions you think people can take to be that type of person, to be that type of vegan?
I think that they just have to understand that when you are single issue vegan, when it's just like this, veganism is just about non-human animals and that's it. Mm-hmm. I think it's understanding that you're never going to bring people into your movement by mm-hmm. alienating them with it. So for example, you know, I don't think that it's very wise of us to say, I don't care about what's happening with the Black Lives Matter movement, especially because I saw a protester holding a pig's head. So screw that movement. It's only about animals and that poor pig, right? I find that to be so divisive and counterintuitive to this movement for a few reasons. For one, if our job is to ally for animals, because that's our job, right? We're allies towards animals. We're not oppressed. They are. I mean, some of us are oppressed. But when it comes to this vegan movement, yeah. the non-human animals are oppressed, and we are their allies, and it's our job to advocate on their behalf. So if we alienate an entire subset of people, an entire group of people, how do we expect that they're also going to join us in that fight when we're like, we don't care about you, we only care about these non-human animals?
Yeah.
So I think for starters, what people need to start doing is diversifying their feed. Social media. Your social media should be filled with Black vegans, Brown vegans, Food Empowerment Project, Christopher Sebastian. You should read books that Af and Sil Koh have written, which is some of the greatest writing that I have ever read. Some of us may have seen them speak somewhere at a conference or a veg fest or something. They're incredible. Af specifically is who I've seen. I have never actually seen Sil, but there's so many different ways. And I think it's really just important to keep in mind that if you are going to ally for animals, you need to make sure that you're hitting all angles. Yeah. And you can't hit all angles if you are avoiding, ignoring, and denying that other people are oppressed too.
You've had some incredible conversations on social media about this. And I've seen it in a lot of vegan groups, and I think it's very hard because you have people that are so focused on the animals that they refuse to go beyond that, or they say they're not racist. They're, you know, vegan, I am a white woman, and it's been very eye-opening for me to learn about the roots of white supremacism and to learn about racism and to see even just a statement that I never thought, like the grandfather clause or something, is racist. And so it's been a learning experience for me, and it's something I wish I would have started a lot sooner. But how do you have those conversations with people like that? Because I've tried and they literally are like, fuck off, or you're wrong, you're making this is political, it just spirals into this really hateful, negative place. How can you have a conversation, or do you have a conversation with people in that mindset, you know?
Yeah, it's a really legit question. I, over the past 6 months specifically, my entire world has very much been flipped upside down, and not because of COVID only. Yeah. It is also because I have discovered and learned that oftentimes in the vegan movement, people are not necessarily living these tenets that they say that they live. So when I see a vegan who is supposed to be the most compassionate kind, and empathetic, right? Those three words you associate with vegans, and we say that. We wear shirts that say compassion, and we have companies that are called compassion and empathy. And this, you know, if you are only extending that compassion to one group of marginalized individuals, which is non-human animals, then to me, you're not actually living vegan values. You're just living selective. In my, the way I look at it, that is just as speciesist as the person who eats animals.
Yep.
Because you cannot separate the two, especially in a world that uses animals as pawns when they want to denigrate people. For example, when someone is protesting or they're quote unquote rioting and they're of a certain color, what are they called? They're called animals. It is derogatory. When you in your mind already put people and animals in a hierarchy, you have to understand that your entire world is essentially surrounded by this hierarchical system of who's more supreme than the next. And so the answer to your question, a long-winded answer, is I don't tend to argue anymore with vegans who show racist behaviors, because much like veganism, I don't think that you can make a racist not racist. However, this is what I will say. When it comes to racism and sexism and all these things, I think it's very important for the people that are within that specific group to be very knowledgeable about this subject so that they can call their peers in. Mm-hmm. For example, I'm a Puerto Rican woman, right? If I see a Puerto Rican woman making statements that are unjust, I believe it is my duty and my job to call that person in and have a conversation about said issue.
Yeah.
If you're a white man, my husband has these conversations all the time with his white male colleagues. It's his job to call these people in. It's not the job of the people who are being oppressed to do that work.
Yeah.
So we as people are all privileged in one way or another, right? Like, we have able privilege because maybe we're not in a wheelchair. We have hearing privilege. We have sight privilege. We have male privilege. We have cis privilege. There's privileges everywhere. It's not a bad thing to have a privilege.
Yeah.
When it's a bad thing is when you don't acknowledge it and you go, okay, I'm just going to pretend this doesn't exist so that I can avoid the heavy topics. Get uncomfortable with these topics and understand that you're going to learn just as much as the next person, and it's okay to be wrong, and it's okay to fuck up, and it's okay to, like, you know, be a better human. Never sit in privilege, because it's a privilege to learn about racism and not have to experience it. And it's the same to me with animals. Like, it is a privilege for us to not have to be in that situation. And so now we have to work with what that privilege looks like and how we can utilize it to make everlasting change for many marginalized groups.
Thank you for that. That was beautiful. I have chills. So we're gonna end it on that. I think, is there any last parting words, wisdom, advice, 2021, come, you know, anything you want to share before we wrap this up?
Yeah, I mean, if anybody's interested in the Patreon, it's super fun. Definitely join us. You can start as low as $5 and you get a ton of classes. It's a monthly subscription, so we try to obviously fill it with a ton of quality and great influencers and people who you know and love, like Doms Thompson, John Lewis, Koya Webb, you know, people who are really movers and shakers in the vegan community. And then I hope to see everyone in 2021 for Vegan Street Fair that will be happening, fingers crossed, March 20th and 21st, if all goes well, of 2021. And then we also have our Vegan Street Fair Nights that happens every Labor Day weekend. And it is also going to be as big as Vegan Street Fair next year. So mark your calendars for that, because I clearly don't know when to quit. And my husband is probably like, why do you do this to me? but I do think that it's necessary and important to have these beautiful events. So I do hope to see you all. And if you have any questions about social justice, if you have any questions about being vegan and using your voice, not just to speak for non-human animals, but for human animals as well. Please DM me and we'll have a conversation. And yeah, I just hope everybody's taking care of themselves and wearing masks and social distancing and doing the right thing so we can all get back to work because we're hungry for it. We really are missing the everyday in and out of providing great events and good vibes and times and really just activism for animals every single day. So please do your part. Please.
And is Vegan Exchange is still going on despite the pandemic?
Vegan Exchange is not going on right now.
Okay.
But hopefully it will. And if you want to follow that, it's Vegan Exchange LA on Instagram or veganexchangeevents.com. We will be coming to new cities. Wink, wink, hint, hint. I will say no more. And that'll be hopefully 2021 because we have lots of work to do here to catch up with what we missed in 2020.
I'm just going to plant a seed.
Yes.
Las Vegas. Please. Please come. I would love to see you here. We would love
you
to
do have know. You do know.
You're coming, girl.
Yes. Well, you do know Vegas was my second home for the past like 10 years. So clearly it's happening.
You need to come back out once life is pandemic free. And we would love to have you here. So for Vegan Street Fair, it's at Vegan Street Fair on Instagram. Same on Facebook. And veganstreetfair.com.
Same on Facebook. It's veganstreetfair.com. Mm-hmm. Yep. You can find us. And I do all the socials. So if you hit us up, it will be me during the pandemic for sure.
Girl, you wear many hats. All right. And all this will be on the show notes on vegansbaby.com. Thank you, Jessica, so much. It was a pleasure. I appreciate you. And I look forward to seeing you in Vegas or LA.
Yay. Same. We'll have a party.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of The Good Fork. I am host Diana Edelman of Vegans Baby. I appreciate you all so much. For more on this episode and other show notes, head over to vegansbaby.com and click on The Good Fork podcast. And for more vegan dining, vegan news, and where to go eat in Vegas and beyond, head over to vegansbaby.com. Have a great one.